Mr. Gibson, you've changed.
Thank you, Your Honor. He's actually got a lot thinner, too. For the record, I'm Eric Broman. On behalf of Antonio Mendez, I'm going to unbutton that. I have to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor. I have no disrespect for this panel, but I am a little disappointed not to see Judge Spearman here today, because I remember working with him as a public defender and a colleague back in the day. Now, that was back in the day when I still had hair, but it was back in the day. And I think he understands that the hardest day that we have as public defenders is when we walk into court, we have no facts, we have no law, and we have to say, we've got nothing. This is not what we want to do.
Well, that aside, isn't this case now moot?
Technically, it might be, Your Honor, but I think...
Well, in the brief, Mr. Gibson concedes the case is moot.
And the thing is I think Commissioner Neal probably had a pretty good reason for continuing to want a decision on the...
Well, she may have, but in the supplemental brief, Mr. Gibson concedes the case is moot, and the record supports that.
Yes.
Because...
I'm not arguing again. I'm answering yes, Your Honor. I was going to the exception to mootness, and so I don't mean to not answer your question, but I think there's probably good reason to actually get a decision on the merits here that it would meet the exception for a substantial issue of substantial public interest that the court should decide. Because there's going to be another case, I hate to admit it, but there's going to be another frivolous motion for discretionary review that we either get in a 1334 case or a 7109 case where our clients are going to demand that we raise something, and we can't in good faith do that. And so we'll be filing a motion to withdraw at that point, and we'll be getting dressed up again. So we're all here. It's briefed. It may be moot.
But is this the right procedural attempt? Is there another way that we could move forward? Because it's also very awkward for this court. So what's the remedy? You're out because Mr. Gibson can't see a substantive reason. Do we appoint someone else because someone else might be more creative? We're taking his word for it.
Right. And that gets me to the point is that you should. You should take our word for it. And because for a couple of reasons. One, Hall doesn't apply. I mean, Hall is a situation, and Bastis doesn't apply. Those are cases that deal with appeal as of right. We're in discretionary review of an interlocutory order. And so there's also, the state's made three claims. He said you should deny this motion to withdraw for three reasons. One is Hall, one is Bastis, and one is abundance of caution. Now, all right, so Hall doesn't apply. Bastis doesn't apply. I remember back again when I had hair in 1994 representing Jonah Bastis and filing those motions, so I'm familiar with that case. And Bastis also had a right to appeal the disposition order as well as a right to accelerated review. That's not this case. So we're talking about abundance of caution, which kind of gets me to your question.
So you got four ways to get here on DR. Typically, it's going to be the first two. You state the standard, you articulate the facts, your client thinks are the facts, then the commissioner's got substance to review on. You say, oh, there's nothing there.
Well,
it's pretty hard to react.
Well, what we're saying, Your Honor, is that there's a presumption of competence in just about every circumstance when you deal with us. And there's a presumption of competence when we file one claim. There's a presumption of competence if we file 10 claims. The fact that we go do our work and come up with nothing, why does the presumption of competence stop when that is the worst day we have?
Okay.
We're trying not
I know,
to do that.
See, let me start with, I don't think anyone on this panel would think less of counsel for saying there's nothing there.
Right. And I'm not trying to be antagonistic.
No, but the question is, how do we make sure the record is one that everyone has confidence in?
Well,
so in this case, counsel thinks there's nothing there. Do we know what the client says? Client disagrees if that was in the record. Client asserts these facts require relief. Here's the standard.
And in our motion to withdraw, we requested the court to allow the client to proceed pro se if that is what the client wants
but
to
why
do.
Why isn't the court better served by having competent counsel repeat the facts the client is standing on if the client is insisting?
Why?
Because if the client agrees, counsel can notify the court.
why
with a declaration, and we would dismiss.
So why is the court better served by? I'm not sure I fully understand your question, but maybe I'm going to miss it here for a second. But why is the court better served by forcing to counsel to file frivolous pleadings? And so that's my question, is that essentially what the state is doing is saying, look.
It's fact-based.
Well.
As opposed to opinion-based. If the pleading said, I've reviewed the record, I can't see a colorable legal issue.
And
my client, however, insists that there are a basis. And here are the facts argues support that.
Our clients, number one, don't always insist on this. Two, they don't insist on a way that's, into something that I can readily transmit to this court. And there are, it sounds like the Anders procedure somewhat, or Anders Light, is being suggested as a way to deal with discretionary review, but Anders doesn't apply here. So we're coming up with something else. So I'm assuming that we're still in a RAP 18.3B motion to withdraw that's under Civil Rule 71 with something else. You want a declaration from us that says we did our job, and this is what we did. And we're also supposed to summarize the record. We're supposed to tell you what our client thinks the issue might be, or what defense counsel in this case thinks the issue might be. And then we're supposed to tell you then, what our clients might tell you. Sorry, Your Honor.
No,
be really
focusing there.
Okay. Sorry. I'll try.
Defense counsel, having determined that there was nothing there, could have contacted the prosecutor. We could have had a joint stipulation that it was moot, except if the client disagreed. If the client disagreed, we could be apprised of the fact that the client disagreed with the assessment.
And that's what we've actually done.
And a factual basis on which the client disagreed.
We filed a motion that allows us to withdraw, allows the client to proceed pro se if the client wants to tell you why he disagrees. And that is an appropriate procedure, because to put us in the procedure where we're withdrawing and we've concluded that there are no issues of arguable merit, and then after making that conclusion, if I can use a minute of my rebuttal, after making that conclusion, we're the ones who are now supposed to tell the court what our client thinks. Our client's not confident in that. And so I respectfully think that that is not a procedure that makes sense in practice, because it's going to put us in wearing multiple hats where we can't actually represent our client, because we're telling you we can't represent our client. And if somebody's supposed to be arguing why these issues don't have merit, I think the lesson from the Pollard case in the 1994 amendments to RAP 18.3 following Pollard are the ones, the state is the one that's supposed to make that argument. I remember the state making the argument that, they're striking my Anders brief in Frank Pollard's case. They're saying, I'm the one who's supposed to argue against my client. Judge Gross said, no, actually, that's your job, state. And so, this is all kind of a mess, and I think it's all procedurally tied there. But the suggestion from Your Honor is this new novel procedure that has us doing some kind of Anders light that's representing our client's arguments that we think are frivolous puts us in a completely unwinnable or untenable position of representing the court that there's nothing here, but our client thinks there is, and then our client's going, man, you sold me out. That's not what I was arguing.
And that's why you included the motion to allow the client to
Thank
proceed.
You. Process. Hopefully I was not too vociferous in that regard. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Lauren Danskin, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General representing the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services, Children's Administration. The department defers to the court on the merits of counsel's motion to withdraw, but would caution that Hall strongly favors its denial. While I stand ready to answer any questions that the court may have, I'll focus my...
Why didn't the state file a motion to deny the petition for discretionary review on the basis that it was rendered moot by the subsequent order?
Yes, Your Honor. I would note that the department does intend to file that motion. We would concede that this issue is moot, that it has been resolved at the trial court level, and we would proceed with that motion.
Well, why didn't it happen in the months intervening? I mean, we're a little frustrated this got to a calendar. So.
I appreciate your frustration, Your Honor. And that was certainly not the department's intent. I think we would absolutely file that motion, I would say that mootness, and this is typically an argument that appellant's counsel would make, might not in this case be a reason not to proceed with the appeal. So I apologize if we have delayed.
Well, this is discretionary review.
Yes, sure. Oh,
okay, so there was an order that was issued, and then there was another order that was issued. The first order did not place the child with the father. The second order placed the child with the father. So there's nothing to appeal. It doesn't meet the criteria for discretionary review. But let me go back to what you started with. Why are you taking the position that we should deny the request to withdraw under Hall? We've just heard Hall doesn't apply. Why does Hall apply?
Your Honor, the department would argue that Hall does apply here. Hall, in its ruling, in no way limits its ruling to only final orders of the court. It's neither in there explicitly nor implicitly. Of course, in the subsequent Grove decision, the right to appellant counsel seems to have been expanded to include motions for discretionary review. So it may be that the court in Hall never considered that it would be applied in this instance. But we do believe that Hall applies here primarily because the court in Hall's concern was competency. And surely if the issue of competency was the concern and the reason for the rule, then a parent who appeals an order of a shelter care order or a parent who appeals a final order of the trial court has no lesser issues in terms of whether or not they're competent to proceed in their own appeal. And I don't, given the high burden that is before a parent to prevail.
That all begs the question about whether after counsel represents there's no basis to proceed with a motion for discretionary review. Why does Hall apply then?
Your Honor, because I'd note that the court in Hall looked at that procedure. That would be an Anders procedure where the...
Well, that's I think we've heard that debate as to whether defense counsel should be engaging in some sort of Anders procedure here. And so is that your position, that defense counsel needs to do that?
No, Your Honor. The court in Hall found that Anders does not apply in the dependency context, and that was for two reasons. Primarily, that the right to counsel did not derive from the United States Constitution, and that's consistent with the court's holding in Lasser. Instead, it came from state law. And again, unlike in a criminal context where there would be some presumed degree of competency, that is not present in the dependency or termination context. There is no presumed degree of competency.
So is your position counsel can never withdraw?
Yes, Your Honor. With Hall as current law, counsel could never withdraw, and I think the court in Hall outlines that right lane rule.
Well, if that were the position, it would certainly put a premium on the parties stipulating when something's rendered moot by a subsequent order.
Yes,
in this case, counsel did not represent that the client agreed it was moot. If in fact, the client agreed that he'd gotten what he was seeking and it was moot and you had made the motion, this would go away very quickly on the commissioner's count.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. What I don't believe is present in either my briefing or counsel's briefing is that the client did indeed agree that this issue was moot.
It was not a fact in the record, so.
No, Your Honor. So I don't believe that fact is before the court. I would agree with counsel that if we are to allow a motion for discretionary review to proceed from each and every dependency order, from each and every case where there is a dependency or termination matter, and that we are never to permit counsel to withdraw, that could impose a significant burden not only on appellant's counsel, but on my office and on the court who would be forced to hear those.
So where it's not obvious that it's moot and client and the defense counsel believes there's not anything of merit, however, you believe that we have to maintain counsel in the case no matter what?
With the Hall decision standing as it is, that could obviously, as counsel notes, lead to significant mischief. There could be numerous appeals filed in every single case, but I know the Hall's been law for 34 years, and my office, and as far as I can tell from appellant's counsel, is not citing that we are seeing this volume of appeals. And that in and of itself might not be a reason to limit the concerns of Hall. The court was very concerned about incompetent persons having to proceed pro se, and simply because it's burdensome does not in and of itself warrant limiting the Hall rule in that way. But I would concede that it's potentially very burdensome.
Well, here, the father was not proceeding pro se. He had an attorney. And the attorney states there's no basis to proceed. But you still take the position that Hall controls, the attorney can never withdraw?
Yes, Your Honor, because in the Hall matter, presumably the counsel there was also competent. And despite that competency of counsel to ferret out those potentially meritorious issues on the appeal, the court felt that that was not enough to protect the rights of the indigent, possibly incompetent parent who would then be forced to proceed pro se. The court considered case-by-case determinations of competency, determined that was too cumbersome, and instead decided that it was in the best interest that counsel be forced to proceed even with a frivolous appeal. Your Honor, they weighed the costs and benefits, and they came out on the side that it was the cautious approach to maintain counsel.
Well, the dependency is ongoing, so it's a moving target. At some point, it could be dismissed, or it could result in a termination. The implication of saying we've got to leave pro ses in the game or take these up and never dismiss when on a merits dismissal has the potential for an awful lot of needless litigation that never gets concluded because it becomes rendered moot at the end of the proceeding, right?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. That is a concern, and that would be a concern not only for appellant's counsel who would have to continue to move forward with those claims, but for my office who would have to respond to those claims, and, of course, the court that would need to hear.
So why isn't your office and the process served better when counsel's got nothing to argue with letting the pro se make their statement of additional grounds type pleading and us rule on the merits of the facts as they allege them?
That might well benefit my office, Your Honor, but I believe that would be inconsistent with a court's holding in Hall.
Well, and in this particular case, there is a request to allow the father to proceed pro se, but now the case is moot, so there'd be no point in granting it.
Your Honor, I can't speak to what issues that the father might raise, but assuming...
Well, the only issue is placement. That's moot. So
yes,
there'd be no basis to grant a motion for the father to do anything about what he already successfully obtained.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree.
And having both of you say that on the record is at least helpful to completing the record about mootness.
Yes, Your Honor. I think there is a broad agreement between the parties that this matter is like.
Well, there's not only broad agreement, there's concessions.
Yes, Your Honor. So I'll briefly summarize and direct the court to the binding precedent that's in Hall and
Hall,
note the caution.
Your whole argument turns on Hall.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it applies. I believe that the court's subsequent rulings in Grove would indicate that the right to appellate counsel in appeals of dependency and termination matters is expansive. If Grove indicates when a counsel may come on to a case, Hall would indicate when a counsel may withdraw from a case, and it seems clear from the court.
But Hall didn't apply to discretionary review, and you conceded that.
Yes, Your Honor. It's not clear that the Hall court contemplated that, but it's not clear either that the Hall court would limit itself only to final orders. It may be that the court finds that that is a fair reading of Hall and limits it in such a way, but that is not clear on its face that it would be limited in such a way. So again, although the department defers to the court on the merits, we would caution that Hall favors its denial. Thank you.
Thank you.
Concession or not, Your Honor, I don't think mootness should be the way that this case gets decided because
it's the reality.
Well, it is, but
you can go ahead and talk about Hall.
Well, there,
I think that would be useful.
All right. Well, I mean, we're going to be back again in a 1334 case.
Which is why
case.
You should talk about Hall.
Thank you. So Hall at page 847 said that absent client consent, withdrawal of counsel on appeal in a child deprivation proceeding will never be permitted. This is not an appeal. This is discretionary review. Hall
so
does
you
not,
distinguish Hall
yes.
based on DR versus
same appeal. Same distinction with Bastis.
Did you ask your client if you could withdraw?
Mr. Gibson has contacted Mr. Mendez, I believe. I'm not sure that we have an answer.
I'm thinking about future practice. Would that be helpful in a motion in the future to say,
trust me, Your Honor.
We think there's nothing here. We've asked. The client said yes. Client said
I'm not here wasting the court's time because we want this to go on. We do our best to make sure that when a client doesn't want to proceed further, we're done. And we get either consent, and I am aware that Mr. Gibson has sent several requests to Mr. Mendez for consent. And whether he got them is anybody's guess.
So my inference from the record was the client had not given consent or we would have been told.
Yes.
and that...
But I'm not sure that there's an active non-consent. I just don't think that we have consent. I mean, you know, sometimes there are language barriers. There are all kinds of reasons why we don't get a form back that we send to a client.
So we're looking for all the ways we could get rid of this on a clean record, but when we get down to it, when there's no consent from the client, we're down to should Hall apply or not.
Right. And Hall,
and that's
no.
why you're here.
And so Hall should not apply. The other thing is I really don't understand the state's position. It's either not well thought out or it's really Machiavellian. And the not well thought out part is they're going to have to file answers to all of these motions to withdraw at some point in time. They didn't bother to do that so far. They're going to, because that's the lesson from Pollard. The Machiavellian part is what worries me, is that what happens is this panel says, okay, Mr. Broman, you and your cadre, you know, your colleagues, now have to file frivolous motions for discretionary review. It doesn't matter. And so I file a frivolous motion for discretionary review. I go argue it in front of Commissioner Neal. She scratches her head. Wow, this looks pretty frivolous. A month later, I'm doing the same thing. And what they've done is made us institutionally incredible. And I ask this court not to make us institutionally incredible. Hall does not apply here. We should be allowed to withdraw.
Thank you. That concludes our calendar today.